By the time I was 27, I decided that I really had to take on the calling of being a writer.
And good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and tonight at 7:30 p.m., the Robinson Film Center presents Stay Then Go, a feature film about autism by writer and director Shelley Ainsworth, part of the Centenary College Southern Circuit Filmmakers Tour. And joining me now in our Knoll Foundation studios and by phone are Megan Hostetler, Education Director of the Robinson Film Center, and Shelley Ainsworth, the writer and director for this film. Megan and Shelley, thanks so much for joining me.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
So, Shelley, we're going to start with you. I know that from all your background information, autism entered your life, and obviously it affected how you kind of view the world and everything. Can you tell me about when autism came into your life and some of the changes that have occurred in your kind of thinking about life and the challenges and autism?
I have a son. His name is Dietrich. He's 26, almost 27, actually. And when he was born, it wasn't until he was about 2 and a half that his daycare called me on a Saturday afternoon and said that he wasn't talking to other kids and he wasn't answering them when they would ask him things. And she said that the county that we live in had a service that allowed like a social worker or somebody to come and test him. And I was like, well, so first of all, you're not going to do that because I'm going to pick who comes and, you know, works with my son. And but that sort of started our journey. And we found a therapist who was actually quite wonderful and said the most important thing to me, which was let him show us what's going on with him and how he views the world. Let's just let him kind of, let's take our cues from him. And that was just such a respectful way to start the whole journey that Dietrich and I have been on since. And I would say that it's a very funny and kind of interesting mirror of being an artist and having a son who has autism, because there's something about having a loved one who has autism that's it's a kind of profoundly solo journey that you kind of go on, because you know the autism spectrum is extremely wide and includes Asperger's, and it's just a very, very wide spectrum. And every person on that spectrum is just so highly individual, and their care and needs are also very individual. And so you really have to look to yourself and look to your child to figure out how to help them have a life of quality and dignity. And certainly there are some parallels, but not very many. And so it reminded me very much and had a kind of funny, interesting mirror to an artistic process in a way, trying to figure out how to help Dietrich and how to help him have, you know, a good life. Dietrich has highly complex autism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my experience that, you know, and I hope that some of this language is starting to fade away, this kind of high functioning, low functioning, because it just doesn't help. And I kind of think of autism in terms of layers. And some people don't have very many layers to their autism, and so it's less complex. And then some people, like Dietrich, he has a lot of layers. He's like an onion in terms of layers. And, you know, his challenge is with language mostly. And I sometimes think about all the layers of his autism that language has to kind of get through to reach him, and all the layers when he wants to put his message out verbally, all the layers of autism that language has to go through to reach us.
So to follow up, he is now adult age.
Yeah, he's 26. Uh-huh.
Okay. And so from that transition from, you know, 2 and somebody says there might be an issue there to 26, what has this process been like for you? Because the title is Stay Then Go. For you, what has this process been like to go through and raise an autistic child and then allow them to kind of be autonomous?
Well, you know, I think Dietrich, he sort of set things in motion. I, you know, as I mentioned with this therapist, you know, taking cues from him. And I feel like that's mostly what I've done during this whole time of Dietrich's, you know, babyhood, childhood, you know, older childhood, young adulthood. And now here he is, you know, he'll be 27 in January. And I just feel like it was, even though language was very difficult for him, there were ways that he really found to communicate his affection for people and his anxiety and, you know, his concerns in the world. And one of those things that was very exciting was that he, you know, when he was about 4 years old, he drew a fork, which is something that he was extremely interested in at the time. He pitchforks and dinner forks, and some forks had, you know, three tines, and some forks had four tines, but he drew this fork, and I will never forget that, because there was such a profound power in that line. It was like that line had so much something very dynamic about it, and I don't know, maybe it's kind of a takes one to know one kind of thing, but you know, and I'm not a visual artist, but I just felt like there was something, even then, you know, when he was four, something going on that was really kind of amazing in his ability to draw and use that as a way to report back. The kind of unique outlook he has on the world, coupled with a real kind of amazing talent. His relationship to art has really saved the day, in a sense, because it's given him a community. Artists like his work and come to him and are drawn to him because of that, and then he is also drawn to other artists' work. And he was able to get into a arts high school, and you have to audition and have a portfolio, and he was able to get into that. And that was when we started to see, wow, you know, this could be something for him. Mm-hmm. And now he has a gallery that represents him, and he's had four solo shows, and he's had, I don't know, several group shows. He had a New York debut at a little gallery in the East Village last year, and he's got a show in a museum right now in the Plains Art Museum. So, yeah, he's kind of moving and grooving. It doesn't take away from how he has a very difficult, complicated disability in a way. You know, autism is, he has struggled every single day, but he has something that he, you know, deeply cares about doing. And I was really happy that I could help him find that path.
So, you know, one of my questions was about Temple Grandin, obviously, but now I'm going to kind of relate this, because with her, it was animal husbandry. And mm-hmm, that was, exactly. She is a PhD scholar, a young child. I've seen the movie. I've run documentaries about her. That was, you know, her mother was told to put her away and forget about her. And now she lectures mm-hmm. and tours. And that's inspiration for every parent out there who deals with any kind of special needs child. That absolutely. These are not throwaway people. For you and your son, it was the arts and visual art, and in particular, mm-hmm. you know, drawing, painting, things like that. That's where his strain of communication with the outside world took him. And now he's being shown all over. So for parents out there who are just beginning on this journey, what words of, I guess, encouragement, wisdom, whatever you want to call it, would you have for them just to say, don't mm-hmm. give up. There is mm-hmm. a way, and you just have to struggle to find it. Maybe I just said it. I don't know.
Yeah, you sure did. I love what you said. I think that's absolutely right. And because it takes a tremendous amount of faith and perseverance. And you just have to trust yourself and trust your child and trust that you know some things, and that there's going to be some people along the way that are going to really help you. And, you know, and I think it's also about, there's a piece about this that's really about enjoying your child. I mean, you know, we have, I think, one life to live. And I don't know, I just felt like I just really wanted to find a way and celebrate him as a son and me as his mother, and that's been a really wonderful thing for me. I mean, you know, I don't know. I Dietrich is such a remarkable person, and I've learned so much from him, and continue to. You know, he's a very hardworking artist, and you know, and so prolific. So it's a pleasure, really.
Yeah. Back to the Temple Grandin. Her story kind of started coming out really about 14 to 16 years ago. I think it started really. But were you aware of her story when, in those early years, when you were discovering Dietrich? So how did mm-hmm. that, like, motivate you to not give up and just to move forward and find that path that you needed?
Yeah, well, you know, there were a couple of people. There was her, and there was also this, at that time, young woman named Donna Williams, who wrote a book called Nobody Nowhere, and that just kind of knocked my socks off as well. And what I felt from the example of Temple Grandin and then this book by this young woman, Donna Williams, was that you have to be not only an advocate, but you have to be an activist. You have to try to make the world better, more aware, a better place, an easier place for people that are unique thinkers to be. And with Temple Grandin, the thing that just was so resounding for me that she would talk about early on was her mother and how, her mother, just had this time every day with her when she was a young girl where they would practice manners and have like a tea and a cookie together after school. And that her mother, just the kind of commitment that her mother made to her and how specialized her education was, and designed for her. And I thought about that so much in terms of raising Dietrich and felt very encouraged that I just really needed to keep looking at him and keep looking at what gave, helped him and what gave him encouragement and confidence and just really keep forging that path with him. And some of her early writing was very, very encouraging and helpful in that way.
So then underneath this story, which for people listening to this interview, this is not a docudrama. It is a drama, a work of poetic fiction, as somebody has written. For this movie, obviously, you're also telling the story of a mother's transformation through the process. Can you kind of give us, without giving us a spoiler, give us the movement and the motion of this movie, where we're going with it? Where do we start and where do we end up? But don't tell us the ending.
God, that's a hard thing to say.
Yeah, I know.
I'll order. Okay, I would say really that this film is about this mother who finds herself in an emergency room, waiting room, and she's waiting for her young adult son who's had an accident on his rollerblades, and she's feeling, that perhaps she didn't, or she's wondering if perhaps she didn't give him enough help to understand, to watch for cars, and that she's kind of questioning some of her parenting, and it kind of leads her on this little series of remembrances, memories, and so we as the audience go along with her, and in there is a surprise that is again it's a big surprise to her and it's a surprise to us as well. Yeah, I guess I would call it an emotional mystery, really. Yeah. The film.
When you're writing this, and one of the things in this little video that I saw that I loved was you described writing as, and you quoted Dorothy Parker, sitting down at your desk and opening your vein. So really, you're pouring out your heart and your soul and all your fears, and you're burying yourself, really, I think, before people.
Yeah.
When you're putting this, now you've done a lot of work before this, but you're putting this down. How do you distance yourself and create a less of a docudrama? What's the process that you go through to filter out and create the fiction?
Yeah, that's such a great question, I have to tell you. That's a lovely question. And I think that's a question that all writers struggle with. And for me, in particular with this screenplay, it was that I needed to create a mother that was different and I had some distance from, different than me, that was not me. And I wasn't one that went to a lot of support groups, that kind of thing. But I did do some of that. And then certainly being, in school and meeting parents and whatnot, there was always one parent at any kind of school function. And it was almost always a woman, a mother, who kind of given up everything to raise her child who had autism, had given up perhaps some bigger career aspirations, given up a marriage, given up some kind of self-care, clothing and, and that parent, that mother always reminded me kind of like of a soldier or something. And I could not judge that person in any way, and certainly not harshly, and also felt a great deal of interest and compassion for that kind of parent. And also felt that siren song myself. I thought, when people talk about special needs, there are special needs, but there's myriad needs. Mm-hmm. That's really more to the point. There's just so many needs. And, I'm trying to figure out how to do all of that for your child. And you can really neglect many, many, many things in your life And I think for some people, that's okay, that maybe that was the right thing, you know, but it's a very controversial thing. And so in trying to write this, that's the character that I decided to work on. And that's the character that she, Marion Baird, was, is that she's somebody who decided quite consciously to take her sacrifice to a pretty far degree and to really devote her life to helping her son. And I think that one person could watch this film and think she was right, and another person could watch it and think she was wrong. And I'm happy that that is the case.
So for this film, when you went about casting it, did you foresee any of these people in it, or was it just, you know, oh, well, they approached this script, you know, just the way I want it? Or is there any relation, you know, of the people that are in the film to autism directly? How did you go about deciding to cast this the way you did?
Yeah, I didn't have a relationship to any of the actors that are in it, although I have relationships with them now and adore mm-hmm. them, because, you know, it was such an arduous shoot. We had to shoot it in 15 days. And I mean, but with the actors, you know, we had a casting director in New York and we had one in LA, and I knew Janelle's work, and we gave it to her, and we gave it to a lot of actors and a lot of women. And I felt sad about this, but a lot of women that were sort of in her age group did not want to play a mother that had a son who was 18 or 19. They had worried about their career with good reason. You know, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, sexism and ageism for women in Hollywood. But Janelle was really interested in the script, and, you know, and she just really wanted to do it. And she had just had a baby. She had a 2-year-old, and then she just had a baby. So she was just kind of ready to take this on. And it was Matt Cain, who was the other lead. I found him, and he is from the UK and spent about a half a year in LA doing work, and then he's also in London. Matt was an incredibly special, intuitive, amazing person. And then when he came here to shoot it, he spent a day, I asked my son, Dietrich, if he'd be interested to meet him and if he would be willing to let Matt come over to a studio. And so they ended up, actually, they were going to spend like 2 hours together, but they actually spent a whole day together. They drew together for a while, and then they went swimming, and it's kind of great. But, you know, and Matt didn't play Dietrich, but Matt trusted the process in such an amazing way.
Well, Megan, this is your chance to kind of chime in here. I've spent most of the interview with Shelley, but you're bringing this as part of the Centenary Southern Film Circuit Tour.
Yes, we are collaborating with Centenary College to bring, it's called the Southern Circuit of Independent Filmmakers, and it is sponsored by an organization called South Arts, which is in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's funded in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. So the Robinson Film Center in Centenary, we also feel really passionately about independent film, just like Shelley, and wanted to bring these filmmakers and these films to our community and give them a platform to show their film and to talk about their work with our audiences.
So now for this showing, which is tonight at 7:30, you're actually going to have a little thing beforehand for young filmmakers who would like to talk with Shelley, and Shelley will be there, correct?
Yes. Like I said, work with Centenary and invite their film students. We also have a program at the Robinson Film Center called the Teen Film Council, and we have a group of 22 high school students that are aspiring filmmakers. And so we bring together those Centenary film students and our own teen film students, and it is open to anyone else who is an aspiring filmmaker, like you said, or is just interested in learning more about film and hearing more from Shelley about her film. We are going to spend a lot of time following the film, talking about the movie, but we feel like that conversation is going to be a lot more centered on what the movie's about and kind of issues that come up from watching the film. So before the film, we want to kind of get into the nuts and bolts of Shelley's filmmaking process and allow her to share that with students.
So now after the film, you've got a panel of folks that are going to be talking, especially about autism and the spectrum and all of the challenges that come from that. And of course, the enriching part of it. So give us an idea of who's going to be on that panel. And this is a chance for folks to come out and have an interaction with with other folks. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. And one of the things that we want to do through the Southern Circuit is to bring these movies and then also use those films as a jumping off point to talk about our own community. And that's what we want to do with this film. We have Shelley is going to be there, obviously, and also Dr. Cheryl Marsiglia. She is from the Autism Diagnostic Center in Shreveport. And then I'm very excited about a mother and son duo that's going to be there as well. Lila Robichaux and her 15-year-old son, Trenton. Lila is an autism advocate who is a former board member of the Northwest Louisiana Autism Chapter and now a current volunteer. And she works with community activities there and helps with their summer camp. And I spoke with her about her role in that. And she said it all stems from wanting help for herself and help for she and her family as they figured out how to raise a son with autism. And that grew into wanting to help others and share her experiences with others. And Shelley, after I've watched the film and then had talked to Lila and other mothers, I see so much of their stories in the film. And I think that's going to be really rewarding for audiences, especially audiences with a family member or a child with autism. I think they're going to recognize a lot of their own story in this story.
For listeners listening, wondering, okay, tell us all about how they get into this movie, all the nuts and bolts of where the Robinson is at, because we're broadcasting to four states.
We are a movie theater in downtown Shreveport. Our address is 617 Texas Street, and you can call for tickets at 459-4122. You can also, of course, get tickets at the door.
And any final thoughts that you have, Shelley, that you want to share with the audience and let them know and kind of... This is an enriching moment for anybody who really enjoys good film and, a powerful story making.
Well, I really like that you use that word enriching. You know, I appreciate that word. I think that, you know, there's the whole thing between education and enrichment. And I think that this film is kind of in that enriching category because it's not, like you said, it's not a docudrama, and I'm not a documentary filmmaker, though. I appreciate that you would say that, Bill. And I also want to just say, if people are interested, they can like us on Facebook and look at our website, which is stateandgo.com. And there's some things on there, clips, and some interesting little pieces on there. So,
all right, Megan, any last thoughts from you?
Sure. I've just really enjoyed listening to Shelley talk about her experiences making the film, and I look forward to continuing that conversation tonight. If you want more details, please visit our website at robinsonfilmcenter.org. We have a whole Southern Circuit section on our website. And after tonight, our next Southern Circuit film will be on November 13th. So come tonight and then come back on November 13th and check us out again.
Well, Megan and Shelley, thanks a lot. This has been really enjoyable.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
You bet. That was Megan Hochstetler, Education Director for the Robinson Film Center, and Shelley Ainsworth, the writer and director for this movie called Stay Then Go, a movie about autism that is going to be featured tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the Robinson Film Center. Right before the movie, there'll be a session for aspiring young filmmakers with the director and writer of this film, and afterwards, there'll be a panel of experts on autism to share their experiences with autism spectrum disorder. For more information about this event, go to the Robinson Film Center website at robinsonfilmcenter.org. That's robinsonfilmcenter.org, or give them a call at 318-459-4122. That's 318-459-4122. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.